With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Fearless, informative, and unfettered. Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, continuing here. Breaking news. The Washington Post editorial board, whose salaries are paid by billionaire Jeff Bezos, who is now one of the largest single farmland owners in the United States, attends UN climate summits, and is a major climate activist. These board members, the Washington Post editorial board members, follow the orders of the megalomaniac billionaires. In quote, new opinion out by the editorial board of the Washington Post, humans might need to re-engineer the climate. And the article and the opinion of the Washington Post editorial board, not a contributor, not a reporter, not an op-ed, but the actual paid staff of the Washington Post editorial board, they touted injecting 100,000 tons of sulfur per year into the lower stratosphere in the atmosphere to block solar rays to try to cool the Earth. This was on April 27th, 2024. And they go on to say, a conversation about the risks and potential benefits is urgently needed. You know why it's needed? You've been naughty. You haven't been buying your EV. You have been eating too much meat. You're making your house too warm in the winter, too cool in the summer with air conditioning. You are taking too many airline flights. You have bought too many new clothes. You didn't stay within your three new items of clothing per person per year. You're not wearing a human hair shirt. You don't have, you've been buying pizzas and pizza ovens from wood stoves in the city near you. You've been naughty, and therefore, we need to have radical, risky, experimental chemicals injected into our atmosphere to save the planet from you and to save yourselves from your behavior. Luckily, billionaires like Jeff Bezos, billionaires like Bill Gates are more than willing to pick up the slack. Bill Gates funding billions of dollars through Harvard University to look at injecting chemicals in the sky to block the sun. Corporately, CBS News this morning had a NYU physicist, Michio Pachu on, and he literally talked about how weather modification has been happening in the United States since at least the Vietnam War, and how we used flooding to flush out cloud seeding and others to flush out, create rainstorms to flush out the Viet Cong. We have the ABC News meteorologist Ginger Z bragging about the cloud seeding going on out west, at least 10, 12 states, CNN reporting on this. China has its own Department of Weather Modification. Russia has bragged, even in Dubai, which had been the record floods, they've been doing all sorts of weather modification. Joe Biden had a slip of the tongue 2 years ago when he said, we can't control the weather yet. The World Economic Forum is touting this so-called weather modification. This is now a huge thing among the billionaire class, among academia, among our corporate media to promote. They will control the weather and you will be happy. You will have government-controlled weather and you will be happy. This is frightening stuff. And for them to be promoting this kind of geoengineering is bonkers. In my book, Green Fraud, if you go to the headline at Climate Depot today, on my website, climatedepot.com, CFAX Climate Depot, you will see. I also have an excerpt from my book, Green Fraud, which talks about this kind of geoengineering of the climate. And in the 1970s, they thought before fossil fuels caused global warming, fossil fuels caused man-made global cooling. They were worried about our aerosols blocking the sun, which was thus creating a coming ice age and making it colder. So they wanted to geoengineer the climate. They also wanted to put black soot on the Arctic so that it would absorb more sunlight to melt it, because they were worried the Arctic ice was expanding too much. And again, this was during the height of the 1970s global cooling scare. It's just incredible. And this is what the Washington Post is promoting their editorial board, engineering the climate. And again, this is going to be used as a stick because we're not embracing net zero. We're not embracing the Green New Deal enough. And therefore, we have to do these radical, risky experiments. This is insane. I will keep you posted on this as this story develops. But in the meantime, let's move on to a more pressing matter. Donald Trump considering picking Doug Burgum. He's moved to the top of the list, according to reports, as his vice presidential. This is the North Dakota governor. Well, there's one little problem. Two. A, he's embraced carbon capture and storage, loves it. B, which is just a boondoggle Republicans like to give their campaign notes. B, he used to work for Microsoft. He's a friend, personal friend of Bill Gates. He's praised Bill Gates, has no problem with anything Bill Gates is doing, as far as I can tell. He comes off as a small-time governor in a small-time state. Donald Trump, don't make that mistake. The other presidential candidate, Donald Trump, that's supposed to be at the top of his list is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. Well, let's take a look. What's going on in the world of Kristi Noem? Here's a little news report, clip one of what Kristi Noem, what's in the news about her? Let's take a look.
News today in a new book released by South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who is also a potential vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump. She talks about how she killed her own 14-month-old dog. In the book, Noem writes about a dog named Cricket, who was 14 months old when Noem killed the dog. She wrote that the dog had a, quote, aggressive personality. She wrote that she hated that dog, that it was untrainable, and that it was less than worthless, not even as a hunting dog. Noem specifically writes about an incident where the dog bit her, and in that moment she writes, quote, I realized I had to put her down. She writes that it wasn't a pleasant job, but it had to be done, and after it was over, quote, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. And she proceeds to write about how she also killed a family goat. So in Kristi Noem's bid to become Trump's vice presidential candidate, she is now writing about how she kills family animals, including a 14-month-old dog.
Okay. As you can imagine, the media is going nuts over this. They're having a field day. Now, a couple things. I know people who had to go out when their dog got old. They go out and shoot it in the woods. It's an old tradition. I know several people, actually. One of my friend's brothers, someone else I know, their father did it to their dog when they get to a certain point. It's either that or, you know, our dog was a 13-year-old French bulldog. We had to load up in the family van. My wife drove him to the vet and they gave him a lethal injection to be put to death. Now, what makes this story cringeworthy, a couple aspects for Kristi Noem. A, she voluntarily put this out. In other words, no one even knew about this. No one was talking about it. I'm not sure anyone knew about it. I mean, maybe their family knew about it, but it hadn't made it anywhere in the public sphere. She's writing a book to tout her credentials as vice president, apparently, and she self-sabotages with this kind of a story. Now, I haven't read the whole passage. I've seen clips, and maybe there's more to what I've seen. But if it's only what I've seen, it's very poorly constructed, written, and it's self-destructive. I don't know what's going on, how this made it past editors or her reviewer, how she made it past herself after she wrote it. You know, you get your proof of the book and you look at it. Her saving grace might be that she said the dog bit her. What should have been in that book, and maybe it is, and maybe I just haven't seen it, is when a dog is known to be aggressive and biting, and bites the hand that feeds you, that is a legitimate reason to put the dog down, and people will understand that. You'll have public sympathy, support. But she said it was worthless. It killed chickens. She was annoyed with it. Finally, it bit her. We don't know the severity of the bite. Like, was it just like a little nip? It sounds like she just didn't get along with this dog, and she took it out and killed it herself. Now, that's going to freak people out because that's not normal custom, especially in the ruling class, urban societies and academia. That's considered very backwoods, very redneck, very rural America, very unwashed masses, very flyover country. So if she put in the book, again, this is about giving context and making a story complete. She should have said, you know, I could have taken it to a vet. The dog had bitten X number of people. It was very awkwardly done. Now, this makes the Mitt Romney story of his putting the dog on in a dog carrier on his roof on a family vacation seem quaint, as some of the reviewers were saying. And the other thing that's interesting is the outrage over this story doesn't pale in comparison, of course, to other life issues. And to that end, we have...
okay.
We have, sorry about that. We have Liz Wheeler explaining the hypocrisy of our media ruling class on this issue. So let's play Liz Wheeler. This will be clip two.
Okay, so Kristi Noem, who is a Republican governor and at least rumored to be in consideration for Trump's vice presidential running mate, just published a book. And in her book, she relates a story about shooting her family dog with a gun because she didn't like the dog. She said she took him out to a gravel pit and shot him. And there's a lot of outrage on the internet about this story, particularly from leftists who are calling her loony for having killed her family dog. And I think there's a valid argument to be made that this is a distasteful thing to do, a weird thing to do. But here's the thing. This outrage that we're hearing from leftists about how crazy it is, how horrible it is that Kristi Noem shot her dog, where is the same outrage when almost a million times a year here in the United States, unborn boys and girls, this is human beings, not dogs, are suffocated, dismembered, their skulls are crushed, and they are killed in the womb?
Liz Wheeler makes a very good point. So just keep all of that in perspective. This is a media who could care less about human life, very upset about the dog's life. I think it's going to hurt Kristi Noem. You don't live down harming a dog like that. 14 months old, untrainable. How bad did it bite you? She could have given it up for adoption. I'm sorry. And I'm not that impressed at this point with Kristi Noem. She brags that she never locked down her state. I've done the research on this, on the publicly available documents. She absolutely wanted to lock down her state in April 2020, but the local officials, the legislator would not allow her. So she was not allowed to lock down the state. And then she later took credit for not locking down the state. And I'm just not sure she can handle. I haven't seen it, but I'll see if I can find the clip. Her future show, she was on CNN recently, and I don't think she was ready. We don't need another Dan Quayle or deer in the headlights Republican VP running or anyone. I didn't like her stance on the women athlete against transgenders a few years ago. I mean, she seems to be doing very safe things. She's not, you know, we'll see. I'm not made up my mind completely on her, but I'm not impressed. And the dog thing does not help the case for her. Okay. Clip three, this is Pope Francis angry at climate heretics. Pope Francis is telling CBS News in an interview, deniers of climate change are foolish for not believing climate research. That's right. You're foolish if you don't believe the United Nations. This is from the Catholic Church's Pope. And by the way, well, I'll show the clip and I'll explain that when we come back with my history with Pope Francis. Clip three.
Francis is also the first pontiff to make climate change a priority. In 2015, to make an important point, images of the environment were projected onto St. Peter's Basilica, the dome designed in the mid-16th century by Michelangelo.
What do you say to the deniers of climate change?
There are people who are foolish, and foolish even if you show them research, they don't believe it. Why? Because they don't understand the situation or because of their interest. But climate change exists.
Well, there you have it. Climate change exists. You heard it from the Pope. 2015, I was in a delegation of climate skeptics that went to the Vatican, to the Vatican Climate Summit. If you go to my Twitter, go to my website, you can go look it up, or you can go to my Twitter feed at Climate Depot. At Twitter, you can go to climatedepot.com. I gave a speech. I was ushered into the UN press conference inside the Vatican. I tried to ask questions of then General Secretary Ban Ki-moon, and I was told that I would be physically removed if I didn't stop asking inconvenient questions. The Pope has an unholy alliance with everything the Catholic, against everything the Catholic Church teaches. The idea that a CBS News reported that he made climate change part of his papacy. Like, what? What are you even talking about? Climate change is antithetical to everything you should be, you know, having even any focus on that issue is against everything you should be doing as a pope. So he's alienated a lot of Catholics with that. And, you know, so that was my story, 2015. And then the Pope came to Philadelphia, and I was actually flown to Philadelphia by The Daily Show. And they put me up in a nice hotel. They did an interview with me about Pope Francis' visit to the United States as a climate skeptic. And I did that. And I've been on other programs. I've done special reports on the Pope. I feel sad as a Catholic. I just don't understand how they could get this far astray and misguided and just say meaningless things too. Climate change exists. Oh, well, climate change exists. I guess he means, you know, alarming, man-made, dangerous climate change exists. Is that what he says? But climate change is always, it's just so, yeah. Anyway, okay. I've been talking about this TikTok ban. I'm telling you, I think we're going to do it on live TNT. I've got my Android Fold 5 phone, and we are going to download TikTok on my phone. I'm going to create an account, and I'm going to let Chinese spy agencies have at all my data, my personal info. I would much rather that than give the United States government the ability to ban apps. And this is RFK Jr. explaining why the TikTok ban is a catastrophe for free speech. And when he does stuff like this, I start getting lured into voting for him. Clip 4, RFK Jr.
You guys have probably all heard about the impending TikTok ban. I want to say that this decision is a catastrophe for free speech and a disaster for the thousands of young people who love TikTok and even make their living there. I also think it's unconstitutional. They say that it's about China harvesting your data. That is a smokescreen because, you know what? The intelligence agencies from lots of countries, especially ours, are harvesting your data from everywhere all the time. TikTok isn't even a majority Chinese-owned company. And the company agreed to put the data behind a U.S. firewall. Well, the Biden administration rejected that deal. They don't understand that TikTok is an entrepreneurial platform, a gateway for thousands of American young people who want to practice entrepreneurship. They want to screw those kids over just to pretend that they're tough on China. So what I'm going to do right now is to file a lawsuit seeking to overturn this law on First Amendment grounds. TikTok users shouldn't have to wait till I'm president to keep using TikTok.
I support RFK Jr. fully on this. You know, again, we are getting closer to the day where I download TikTok and register on this program as a protest. All right. It's just, I do not want to give the United States government that power to determine what we are not allowed, what we are allowed to see, what risk we can take. Fine. If the Apple and the Google Play Store want to host it and users want to download it, you know, you could be like cigarettes, the government could put a warning label on it, but you're not allowed to ban it. Sorry. We're not going to give you that power. Okay. This next clip is great. It's a reminder of how stupid and evil the COVID lockdowns were. This is just brilliant. Clip 5.
My colleagues on the left keep telling me about how Donald Trump is a fascist and how they think he's the next Mussolini. And what we experienced during the pandemic from Democrat governors and local leaders with their hypocritical and unscientific policies is the closest thing you'll ever see to fascism in the history of this country. They told us to stay in our homes. They told us not to go to church. They told us not to attend funerals and only leave our homes for what they deemed to be essential travel. And when we rightly questioned the efficacy of their decrees, they told us to trust the science. Well, I'm about to show you what real fascism looks like, and I'm about to show you what their science really looks like. During the pandemic, something struck me. People weren't allowed to use jogging or biking trails, even in my hometown of Houston, Texas. And speaking of Houston, our Democrat mayor ordered around 500 basketball nets removed from public courts because, God forbid, anyone have any fun outside to get essential vitamins and fresh air. Skate parks were filled with sand in California so people couldn't play outside and, again, get fresh air. In Malibu, paddleboarders were arrested for the crime of paddleboarding alone in the middle of the ocean. However, one group of people were exempt from lockdowns, from mandates, and apparently from the virus itself. Now, I'm of the opinion that this group of people should have their blood tested because who knows? Maybe they had the cure before we had the vaccine. And I think you know what group I'm talking about. That's right. I am talking about the righteous George Floyd protesters. According to one political article, these protesters risked their health and their life for, quote, the health of our nation. And do you remember those same health professionals telling us to stay home or else you're going to kill grandma? 1,000 of those same health professionals signed a letter saying, don't shut down protests using coronavirus concerns as an excuse.
That was GOP Representative Wesley Hunt, just brilliantly done. At a hearing, laying down these tracks. This is the kind of Republicans we need. This is the kind of narrative reframing. This is the kind of confrontation we need in order to never let this happen again. I remember the paddleboarding incident in particular, how insane that was, where the police boat out there swimming and getting surfers out of the water in California. It was just nuts. All right, final clip. This is emeritus professor from Princeton University, Dr. William Happer, foremost expert on the greenhouse gas effect, on how the farmers of the world must revolt, that the war on methane, that's how they're coming after you for eating meat. That's why they want you to eat Bill Gates' lab-grown meat printed on a 3D printer, grown in a Petri dish, steel vat. You know this vast, disgusting. And they want you to eat insects. This is the reason why methane. So Dr. Will Happer, Princeton University, 200 peer-reviewed studies, explains why it's a bunch of bunk. Clip six.
Speaking of crazy, methane. Methane is even less of a trace gas than CO2. Is this true?
Methane is a greenhouse gas. Its contribution to the warming is only about one-tenth that of CO2. CO2 itself isn't doing any harm. And so why we would go after methane, and the victims are farmers. All over the world, farmers are being attacked because their cattle are belching methane. You know, if you're a cow, you have to belch methane. That's how you digest the fodder. I'm hoping that maybe the farmers will finally lead the world and push back against this craziness. All of it is nuts, you know, it's all made up threats that empower a very small minority and cause enormous harm to everybody else in the world.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. It's exactly what they're trying to do. The intentional collapse and rationing of energy, our freedom of movement, transportation, and of course, food. High-yield agriculture, nitrogen, and meat-eating methane. They want to ration it, soften us up. We're more likely to eat insects, lab-grown meat, more processed food. They want to get rid of farms. They want to be able to control the global food supply. They're well on their way. And he said that we need to rise up. Farmers are in Europe. They halted, at least temporarily, the Green New Deal because of an EU election coming up in June. And by the way, I'll be going to Vienna, Austria, to a major climate conference in June. And I think that's right either before or after those EU elections. So I will keep you posted on that. All right. When we come back, I'm excited to welcome back to the program Jerry Corsi. He is the author of a powerful blockbuster new book, The Assassination of President John Kennedy, The Final Analysis, presenting indisputable forensic evidence that two shots were fired from the front and rear, dispelling the lone gunman theory. Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis, new book, will be joining us when we come back on Unleashed on TNT. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss this.
Sonia Poulton.
They were talking about the new report that a generation of children will fail at school and in exams as a consequence of lockdown. Susanna said, I feel we failed our children. And the others nodded in unison. But no, wait a minute, Susanna. We did not fail our children. We i.e. people like me, we campaigned and protested, we petitioned, we shouted, we podcasted, we made endless social media posts, and we said very, very loudly and repeatedly that we are deeply, deeply concerned with the lockdown measures being applied to everyone, including children. And you, Miss Reed, and the rest of Legacy Media just kept ramping up the pressure day in and day out.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Listen.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, joining the program now is author Jerry Corsi, who's the co-author along with David Mantic of the brand new book, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. Forensic analysis of JFK autopsy x-rays prove 2 headshots from the right front and 1 from the rear. Book was just released last month. Welcome to the program, Jerome Corsi.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be back with you. Thank you very much.
All right. We have to unpack this. So first of all, what led you to write this book? I mean, so much has been written about JFK assassination, movies, books, reports, government claims and counterclaims, intelligence agency reports, the Warren Commission. How did you get involved in JFK's assassination, The Final Analysis?
This is my second book. The first one was Who Really Killed JFK. That was done in 10 years ago, the 50th anniversary. This is just after the 60th anniversary. It's a big book. It's a 564-page book, made it easy to read. Dr. Mantic is both has a PhD in physics and an MD. He's a radiation oncologist. He's seen the JFK x-rays in the archives more than anyone else, 9 times. And he did optical density measurements of the x-rays, which are scientific measurements. So you take a densitometer, which shoots a beam of light up through the x-ray, and then an arm comes down and you capture how much light came through that point. And you can see what you can really tell what you're seeing and looking at in the x-ray. Dr. Mantic was able to prove scientifically that the 3 x-rays that are in the archives today of the autopsy skull x-ray of JFK are all 3 forged. They were all doctored to mask evidence of frontal shots. And yet the x-rays show 3 frontal shots. A shot hit JFK at the forehead, and you can actually see the bullet stream breaking up across the top of his head. That did not get removed. It's right there, and it does not exit. The biggest fragment's in the back. That's clearly an exit wound. Another shot hit JFK on the temporal bone by his right ear. You can see the entry point, and it blew out the back of his head. And a third shot hit at a low angle, the back of the head, right at the knob in the back of the head, and did blow out some of the front of the head. But there was no shot in the x-rays from the 6th floor of the Dallas Texas School Book Depository where the sniper Lee Harvey Oswald was supposed to have been. Dr. Mantic's been publishing this for 3 decades. His work has been very technical. I decided I would put the science, you know, the logarithmic understanding of optical density measurements in the appendices, make the book accessible so everybody can read it. And it's a compelling scientific CSI proof of 2 frontal shots, which means that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the lone gun assassin. And this is indispensable proof. It's indisputable.
Now, are you saying Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't even a shooter, or you're saying he was not the only shooter?
I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald fired a shot that day. I think he was, he said he was a patsy. He failed the paraffin test. There's no shots from that sixth floor that hit the head. The three shooters, also a shot came through the windshield and punctured JFK's neck. The three shooters, one was located on the grassy knoll. One was on the south side of Dealey Plaza, across from the grassy knoll, above the triple underpass at the railroad yard. And the third was a low angle, probably Daltex building behind Jack Kennedy. Those were the three shooters. You can tell that from the angles of the shots in the skull x-rays. And the Parkland doctors, Jack Kennedy's body came immediately to Parkland Hospital, they drove him there directly from the shooting. The doctors at Parkland said Jack Kennedy was hit by frontal wounds. They could clearly see the blowout in the back of the head. And they gave a press conference that said frontal wounds. But the government had a problem, and that was that within about an hour, a press AP photographer named Elchins had taken a picture. JFK had just been shot in the throat through the windshield. He had his arms up, and the Texas School Book Depository is behind him. So that picture means the government has a problem. All the shots now have to have come from the rear. And it's clear that the limousine had passed the Texas School Book Depository when the shooting started. And so they got a body with frontal shots, and they've got a setup story to make Lee Harvey Oswald the killer, and that would be requiring all the shots to come from the rear. The government had a massive problem, and it led to more mix-ups, which we discussed fully in the book.
Now, when you say he looked at the x-rays, he said he looked at them 9 times and he was the only one to look at them that much. How do you get access to those? You have to go through the government. Why did the government grant access to anyone? Can anyone go look at them, or do you have to have a compelling reason? What's the control of those x-rays of his head?
The skull x-rays are controlled by the family through a lawyer. And okay. Dr. Mandick, being a radiation oncologist, had the credentials. And for the first 9 visits, they let Dr. Mantic in and also Dr. Chesser in. Dr. Chesser validated independently the conclusions of Dr. Mantic doing his own optical density measurements. When both of them started publishing, the Kennedy family lawyers quit giving permission to look at the x-rays. So Dr. Mantic has not been allowed back to look at the x-rays since the end of the 90s. And basically, his research is very well known in the JFK community, but it's not known by the public because you have to be able to master the science. And with the book being put together in a very readable form, and even show you in the Zapruder film, the first shot is to the back of the head. That's at 313. That's where you see the head flap and the brain material coming out of the brain to the right. Within less than 2 seconds, the shot hits from the grassy knoll, and Jack Kennedy is thrown violently back into the left. In fact, the blood and gore from his head goes all over Clint Hill, who's the Secret Service agent trying to get on the left back of the limousine, and it goes all over Bobby Hargis, who is the inboard medical motorcycle cop on the left. Jackie Kennedy gets out of the car and goes back to the left back of the trunk, pick up a piece of Jack Kennedy's head to put it back in his head. Clearly, that was a shot from the grassy knoll that hit here and threw Jack Kennedy violently back to the left and threw his brain matter out through to the left. In fact, a piece of his skull, the Harper fragment, was found to the left on the grassy knoll, other side. So it was indisputable at the time that he was shot from the front. But then when the cover story came out, government had a problem and they had to make arrangements to alter these wounds before the autopsy, which we describe in detail in the book.
Well, all right, let's go one more time, though. Optical density measurement, looking at an x-ray, just give us as best you can the layman's definition of that, just so people know, because we've heard it a couple times, and just try again so we understand that.
Well, an x-ray has different gradients of gray in it. It's a negative. You know, if it's black, you can see there was nothing there because all the silver oxide of the negative got hit by light and it turned black. If it's white, the x-rays are being blocked by bone or other tissue and don't make an impact on the silver nitrate. So the first real indication is that there's a range of black and white. And this white patch put on the back of JFK's head is just too unnaturally bright to have been natural. It's like having a 10-mile-high building being created. You can't do it. And then the frontal X-ray, they put in what looks like a 6.5 millimeter round to try to say that was the gun by Michael McConnell, 6.5 millimeter round that Lee Harvey Oswald was using, but they only put it in the front to back X-ray. It doesn't appear in the side X-rays. So it has no depth. It's not really there. Again, it's an obvious indication of fakery. The optical density measurements are scientific proof of forgery. And then when you begin looking at the damage done and you start seeing the two frontal wounds, which are clear in the X-ray, including this frontal trail, if you just look at the book cover we put in blue, you can see the fragments breaking up, the biggest one at the back. I mean, this is like CSI, Mark. This is laboratory analysis, which is accepted by scientists as definitive. And now a whole group of radiologists have concurred with Dr. Mantic. And so it's really, I think, it's really set in stone that this is reality.
All right. A couple things that for me to understand. You said something about the family has to give authorization to research, the Kennedy family has to give authorization for a researcher to look at these X-rays. But when they found out, the Kennedy family wants to know the truth or not. You're saying they shut off his access because they didn't like what he was finding, or they just want to keep it, they just want to bury it, or the family wants to know the truth? Clarify that.
The Kennedy family has not been pursuing the truth. They wanted it shut down. Now, Robert Kennedy Jr., running for president, has said that the CIA killed his father, and this book proves he's right. This gives him the proof that from the very first moments of the assassination, when the limousine arrives at Parkland, the Secret Service has a bucket of water and they're cleaning up the gore at the back of the back seat of the limousine. They're destroying a crime scene. The bullet that came through the windshield, people recognize it. When a bullet goes through a windshield, it makes a puncture mark and the inside of the glass bevels out. You could see this.
Yeah.
So therefore, they got the car surrounded so no one could get close to the car or photograph it, and they got the limousine out of there very quickly. The front windshield was changed in Dearborn, Michigan on the Sunday after the shooting. And so therefore there was alteration of evidence by the Secret Service with the cooperation of the government. Jack Kennedy's body, when he arrived at Andrews Air Force Base, he left Parkland at gunpoint. The Secret Service pulled their guns, got a ceremonial casket, and said the body's coming back to Washington. The coroner and a justice of the peace were there at Parkland Hospital to do the autopsy. It was no federal crime to shoot the president. But they stole the body away. When the body arrived at Parkland, at Bethesda that night, the shooting, at 6:30, Jack Kennedy's body arrived in a steel shipping casket. It was taken out in a body bag. The body was naked and the head was wrapped in a towel. That's not how it left Parkland. And there's ample evidence of this. The Assassinations Records Review Board took depositions of the corpsmen present. There's sworn testimony to this fact. And the two Bethesda pathologists who were going to perform the autopsy, Boswells and Humes, did pre-autopsy surgery. They massively tried to change the Kennedy wounds from frontal wounds to back wounds. When Kennedy's body at 8 o'clock was brought out into the morgue in the ceremonial casket from Dallas. They'd managed to do casket switches. It was opened up, and when Kennedy's body was put on the table, the doctors knew this was surgery. The parietal bone in the top of Jack Kennedy's head had been taken off with a saw. The doctors saw this, and Dr. Hume says there was pre-autopsy surgery to the head, and two FBI agents write that in their 302 report, documenting that there was pre-autopsy surgery done to Jack Kennedy's head, which means they altered the wounds.
Was that in the report then, or no? They just
yes,
made it
was in there. No, it was in the 302 original report. It was in the original report.
It was in the report that the Secret Service agents heard him say that, or did he put that written in the report?
The two agents, Dilbert, Siebert and O'Neill, were each present at the autopsy. They were recording what was said, and they said, There was pre-autopsy surgery to the head. They documented that in the reports. They weren't physicians. That had to have been said.
But was it in? Did the doctor who said it put it written in his report, or he did not?
No, the doctor didn't. No, they're not. They didn't admit to doing it.
That's what I mean.
But say, when you see the head, if you're a surgeon or medically trained, and you see a head that's been surgically operated on, it's obvious. This was not a gunshot wound.
Yeah.
You could see that the top bone of the head had been removed. And so obviously, when the body was taken out, the gallery was shocked to see that there had been surgery done. And Dr. Humes obviously had to say something about it. So he made it sound normal. Pre-autopsy surgery. Okay, but it's in the 302 report. It's in fact, we show you the pictures of the body in the morgue before the autopsy, and you can see the pre-autopsy surgery done to the head. It's obvious in the photographs.
Wow. Okay. We have to take a break right now, but we're talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi, who's a co-author with David Mantic of the new book, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. This is a fascinating discussion. Stay tuned. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back to continue this discussion.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi, co-author of the book, along with David Mantic, of the new book called The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. All right, a couple of things. You had mentioned that RFK Jr. wanted the truth. Who's in charge of the Kennedy family? Like you mentioned, they have to authorize anyone seeing these x-rays. Is it like John F. Kennedy's sons? Or he had a son and a daughter, right? He only had two kids. Then John F. Kennedy Jr. is dead. Jacqueline Onassis is dead. So who's actually of the Kennedy family? Who's calling the shots on with this?
We don't know because a lawyer fronts for them. Okay. So but we know that the Kennedy family has supported Biden. Bobby is pretty much out there alone. And Bobby has said clearly that the CIA killed his father. And Bobby has read the book. He's asked for a copy of it. We made sure he got one. I've spoken to him about the book. And Bobby knows that the evidence is here that the CIA killed his father. It was a coup d'etat. Within minutes of Lee Harvey Oswald being arrested, he was arrested about an hour after the shooting. They had distributed worldwide a full dossier on Lee Harvey Oswald. It was printed in newspapers around the world, and that was instantly put together. There was no internet to do searching on. That was already pre-manufactured. And the whole military-industrial complex was in on it because Curtis LeMay, who signature smoking cigars, you know, he's the general who firebombed Germany and then firebombed Japan, and he wanted to go to war on the Cuban Missile Crisis. Well, General LeMay and other generals attended the autopsy and gave orders. General LeMay was smoking his cigar, and when asked to put it out, he blew smoke in the faces of people who said, put out the cigar. So the generals were in control of the autopsy. Jack Kennedy would not fight a war over the Cuban Missile Crisis. He backchanneled with Khrushchev. We took our missiles out of Turkey. They took their missiles out of Cuba. Jack Kennedy had signed an order. He was not going to go to war in Vietnam. He was withdrawing troops. There was billions of dollars going to be spent with this war. And so the military-industrial complex, which Eisenhower warned us about, together with the CIA and the willing assistance of the journalists, all went along with this lying cover story that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole gun assassin, even though it was clear in Parkland. The doctors at Parkland, by the way, were badgered all night long in the night of the assassination by doctors in Parkland, saying if they didn't change their story that they were wrong, the shots were frontal shots, that they were going to lose their licenses. They were going to be called up for accreditation and they would lose their licenses. So the government put enormous pressure here to change frontal wounds in Dallas to wounds in the from the back in Bethesda. They had a problem, another problem. James Tague, who was a witness, got hit in the cheek by a bullet that missed. Only three shells were left in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. So now you only had two shots, not three, to do all the damage done to Kennedy and to Connally. Connally said he was hit by a separate bullet. And so what the Warren Commission did, they said only one shot hit Kennedy at the back, top back of his head, not the three shots that the x-rays show. And they said, secondly, a bullet hit him in the back, exited his throat, hit Connally in his ribs, broke three ribs, broke the radial bone in his arm, landed in his left leg, and was pristine. Committee Exhibit 399, which is the magic bullet, impossible. Right. And the fact is that those forensics were designed by Arlen Specter because they were trying to make the physical evidence of the autopsy fit into the cover story. So the government's case, every time you look at it, doesn't fit together. Okay, a bullet doesn't, there was no connection found between the neck wound and the back wound. They kept raising up the back wound and they kept raising up the head wound to make it appear to do all this damage. Damage the head by one bullet when the x-rays show three bullets clearly hitting the head, none of them from the angle of the Texas School Book Depository. So the government had to keep adjusting its evidence to fit the cover story that had been set with Oswald when the evidence of the body did not reflect the truth of that cover story.
Governor Connally, the bullet, did he die with that bullet still in his body?
He died with part of it in the body. They removed much of it, but he still had more lead in his body when he died than was missing from Commission Exhibit 399, the pristine bullet. And by the way, there were several pristine bullets found. There were bullets where a lot of bullets found that day, not just the one that supposedly hit Kennedy and Connally, which had never happened.
Well, here's a gruesome thought. Is there any movement ever would that do anything if someone exhumed the body of Governor Connally and retrieved the rest of that bullet? Would that prove or shed light on anything in this that you're alleging or that your book reveals?
I'm sure that would be one of the key pieces of evidence that you would see that there was more lead in Connally still today buried than was missing from 399.
So it would show that, yeah, the more bullets. Okay.
And so similarly, if depending on the status of Kennedy's body, I mean, you would be able to see the frontal wounds because they're to a trained radiologist looking at the x-rays with knowledge of the pathology of gunshots, especially the bullet that hit the forehead and leaves an obvious bullet trail, the upper right-hand quadrant of Kennedy's head is a frontal shot. And then the blowout at the back of the head is fully documented because we have the Harper fragment that was found in its occipital bone, and it fits into the back of the head. There's actually one of the autopsy pictures that appears to show the actual wound at the back of the head the way it was, which was a massive wound, like about the size of a baseball, the occipital region to the right. And all the doctors at Parkland, there's photographs of them in the book, are all saying that they saw this wound when Jack Kennedy came into the trauma room one at Parkland Hospital. And there's a lot of testimony about that wound.
All right, another gruesome question. Was his body cremated or is it actually embalmed at Arlington National Cemetery, JFK's?
There was a embalmer who attended the autopsy and watched the pre-autopsy surgery and gave testimony about it. He tried to prepare Jack Kennedy's body for display back at the White House. By the way, from the frontal shot from the window, there was a lot of little glass, small bleeding in Kennedy's face from the glass that hit him. When that shot came through the windshield, the mortician had trouble repairing. Blood kept seeping out no matter what he did to it. The back of the head required a massive fill. So the mortician not only knew there were frontal shots, but he also saw the pre-autopsy surgery and he testified to it to the Assassinations Records Review Board under oath.
But is the body still intact today at Arlington National Cemetery embalmed is what I'm asking?
Yes, it should be. It was not cremated. It was embalmed and it was buried in the final casket in Arlington Cemetery. It should be there and it should be.
I'm just going to ask it. Would exhuming the body of JFK prove or reveal anything useful at this point in time ever in the future?
It just depends on the status of the body. If the cranial structure was still intact, it hadn't begun to disintegrate, then it should reflect the x-rays because the x-rays are authentic. Even though they are the original x-rays altered. So the original x-rays are gone. We have in the archives are three copies, altered copies of the originals. That alone is damning proof. Why do we have altered copies in the archives of three of the remaining JFK x-rays? Why would they be altered?
All right, so how many doctors, how many Secret Service, how many military flight transfer, how many people, how many people were exposed to either major aspects or at least one part of this deception cover up? And did any of them later in their life either reveal anything, admit stuff on deathbeds? How much of that happened? Anything like that where that was suppressed? Did people come out and say, you know, I can't hold this anymore. I know XYZ about this. I witnessed the following about JFK.
At least two of the doctors who changed their stories, Malcolm Perry and a doctor named Crenshaw, later admitted that they had been forced to lie and that what they saw at Parkland was Jack Kennedy shot from the front. And many of the corpsmen who were at the pre-autopsy surgery began giving testimony. Some of them appeared in The Men Who Killed Kennedy, saying that the body arrived at the morgue in Bethesda at 6:30, an hour and a half before the official autopsy, in a shipping casket and in a body bag. Then they also gave testimony as to the pre-autopsy surgery that they witnessed. So there was a lot of testimony of people who knew that this was a lie. And they were either not interviewed by the Warren Commission or they were ignored altogether by the press or both. And they finally did later come forward. The Assassinations Record Review Board did an excellent job of getting these people's true stories on the record. And the affidavits are stunning about the pre-autopsy surgery done at Bethesda to alter the wounds. And you can see it, obviously, in the pre-autopsy photographs taken of Kennedy when that, you know, alteration of the wounds is photographed. That's obvious to anybody who has medical training that those are not gunshots. I mean, the top of the brain is off. The brain is all scrambled. They were looking for lead to remove lead. And probably the only reason they didn't remove the forehead shot was probably liquid mercury, and they couldn't remove it. They were stuck with it. That's why you can see the pattern of that shot, whereas other lead that was in Kennedy's head that would have given more ballistics evidence had been removed in the pre-autopsy surgery.
Wow. What is the latest status on these documents? Are they sealed for like another 50 years? Like, what's the official government
I'd say most of the documents have been released, but there's yet a few thousand.
Sealed?
Yeah. A few thousand that are sealed that they won't release. And I think there's not going to be a document that says we did it. But I think the documents that are there are going to be saying that Lee Harvey Oswald was working with the CIA at the time of the assassination and was probably on a different assignment. Lee Harvey Oswald said, I'm a patsy. I'm waiting for somebody to come forward. Tried to make a phone call to an intelligence connect from the jail in Dallas. Oswald was clearly an operative. He was in a program where the military were induced to defect as undercover agents. And I think if we got even Russia to release their documents, we would find even more that Russia knew that Oswald was an operative, a CIA operative. CIA's handprints or fingerprints are all over this. At the end of the book, publish a CIA memo for 1967, where it's official CIA policy to discredit as a psychological operation and conspiracy theory anybody who does theorist, anybody who doesn't agree with the Warren Report. That's official CIA policy.
Thank you. We're out of time, but yeah, you're afraid for your life. Let me just ask that quickly.
Well, Mark, with everything I've done in my life, all the things I've done, I think they just make me more famous if they killed me.
So I'll let you live. All right. This is Jerome Corsi. Thank you for joining the program. The book is The Final Analysis, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. Thank you so much. Wow. Powerful. All right. This has been Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. See you next time.